This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Yes, the sound of constant craving. That means that I'm with you here now till 2 o'clock. My name is Pete Dillon, and welcome to yet another episode of Cravings here on Joy 94.9. 0427 Joy 949 is the number for you to send a text. 0427 569 949. 1300 Joy 949 is the telephone number to speak to any of the multitude of staff on our front desk, or you can email here at onair@joy.org.au. Finally, you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. And that will come straight to me in the studio, where I am joined by, the first of a series of very handsome guests today. His name is Dan Sims. We've met him before. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Pete.
We have a big show ahead of us, and what I wanted to get you in for was to talk about wine, because people have so many questions about wine, and you guys at the Wine Guide and Somers Australia are doing so much that we might be able to answer some questions for some people.
Well, I hope so. I mean, the thing about wine, I mean, we all know it's so huge and vast and can be incredibly intimidating. So I think the main thing about wine is actually the first and most important thing is actually figure out what you like and why you like it. That's the big one. Instead of listening to all these other people tell you what's good and what's bad and what's not, you know, if you figure out what you like first and, you know, have a better understanding and you can communicate about that, That's the key, though, I think, of, you know, really getting a better understanding about it.
And we can take the wank out of wine as well.
Oh, God. As much as we all like a bit of wine wank at all, you know, best of times. But, you know, there's enough out there, you know.
There is. Also joining us today, Ryan Flaherty, a very exciting chef whose CV probably reads like a who's who of restaurants around the world. He'll join us. We'll also speak to the incredibly talented and also very good-looking Jake Nicholson, who has taken over as the exec chef at Circa the Prince. For our Jewish listeners, if you are Jewish and listening in today, today is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. I don't know that you should be listening in, but we wish you all of the best on this exciting day in the Jewish calendar. Food and news. The Stanley Pub, it seems, Anne-Marie and Shane Harris's cute pub in the quaint former gold mining town of the same name in Stanley in central Victoria, has recently lost yet another chef, their third in a little under a year. Ludo Balacki was returned home to Mauritius for family reasons, but replacement Shauna Stockwell, an old friend who's worked with David Thompson at Darley Street Thai and at the Australian Embassy in Washington, has moved to Stanley to join them, so we expect continuation there. Colin McLaren, the former undercover cop whose role is in exposing the local mafia, is the subject of the next Underbelly production, is selling a Villa Gusto in Bright to pay for a new city venture. He isn't entirely severing ties with his Italianate villa, a seven-year labour of love. He's looking for a buyer for the freehold while he intends to keep the lease and continue operating the boutique accommodation and fine dining restaurant that won back its chef's hat in the latest Age Good Food Guide. After leaving Crown, David Yalouz has taken over responsibility for the food outlets at Melbourne Airport's new International Terminal 2 for Brisbane-based ARE Airport Retail Enterprises. The former Crown catering manager and 2IC to Walter Wagner says the airport hasn't exactly been synonymous with quality food, something we as consumers all know, but he has seized the opportunity to helm ARE's expansion into Melbourne with joint ventures with Shannon Bennett and Frank Kimura. As we've reported here before, an airport-based cafe view will be similar to the one on St Kilda Road, with in-flight dining boxes to boot, while the Movida crew will open Bar Pulpo towards the middle of next year. Tom Milligan, former executive chef at the Windsor Hotel, has been recruited by Colonial Leisure, owner of the Botanical, to work as executive sous chef to the very well-known Chong Lu. Colonial Leisure Chief Executive Lyndon Waple said Milligan, who since leaving his five-year stint at the Windsor, has been concentrating on training chefs at the likes of the Holmes Glen College of TAFE and William Angus, he's the perfect man to nurture a training environment in the soon-to-be-reborn South Yarra icon. As long as they keep cold beer there, I don't really mind. And one of the themes of the 2011 Melbourne Food and Wine Festival will be a celebration of the lost arts or the forgotten culinary skills. And to that end, self-described jelly monkers Bompas and Parr have been booked for the Theatre of Ideas. Sam Bompas and Harry Parr's blend of jelly, art and architecture has made them one of London's hottest tickets. Their ingenious, hilarious and occasionally insane stunts have included a walking cloud of breathable gin and tonic. Hello, that's me when I die. And flooding a building with 4 tons of cognac punch. Again, me when I die. Check them out at jellymongers.co.uk, but tickets for the festival go on sale on October 4. Do remember, it is my birthday that week, so any tickets to Masterclass that you would care to provide, I'm more than happy to accept. We have reported before Nigella's coming, Alana Ezak is coming from Spain. There's been some more reports that I can't confirm, but a young woman from Hong Kong who is very exciting, who we spoke about last week, may well be here. Melbourne chef Jeff Lindsay has ended a 10-year association with Pearl, the award-winning restaurant he and businessman Andrew Gunn established at the turn of the decade, rather with a whimper more than a bang. Pearl Cafe and its catering business were sold to Chris Lucas in October last year. Lindsay, who is looking for new opportunities, maintains his tenure at Pearl after its sale had always been on a handover basis. He says he had always intended to leave. There's no ill feeling between Chris and me. He'll make more money out of Pearl than I ever did. Lindsay's role at Pearl moved more from full-time to part-time earlier this year. He says his only regret is not having been able to say goodbye properly. Chris Lucas is understood to be extremely close to a deal in a new restaurant in Melbourne's central business district, although we understand it will not be a clone of Pearl. Given his track record, this could be significant, but he has refused to comment, but sources suggest the site is in the burgeoning Flinders Lane precinct near Coda. We hear Pearl's David Ricardo has been searching for a chef to take on the new city gig. The words modern Thai have been whispered. Now, Mr. Sims, am I allowed to report other movements at Maze or not?
Not as yet.
Not as yet, righto. Stand by for news next week. Ferran Adria, Heston Blumenthal, David Chang, Thomas Keller and Neil Perry. Perry is the only Australian in a dazzling lineup of international stars invited to Spain's annual Gastronomica Congress to be held at San Sebastian from 21 to 24 November. He's been asked to give a class in the art of barbecue, but don't expect him to be throwing shrimps around. He'll be sharing his knowledge of the dry aging of meat as practiced at Rockpool Bar and Grill restaurants both here and in Sydney. Other chefs at the Congress, which is open to the public, include Andoni Adruiz, Wally Defresny, and Juan Mari Azak. Adruiz, along with Blumenthal and American Thomas Keller, will be a guest at Perry's annual Starlight Foundation Ultimate Dinner next year. Mushrooms with additional vitamin D are about to go on the market. The extra vitamin content is achieved by exposing them to ultraviolet light during their growth. South Australian Agricultural Minister Michael O'Brien has said this week that the super mushrooms will go on sale within months. He says South Australia has the best quality mushrooms in Australia, and nearly half of those grown are sold interstate. This particular development not only positions South Australia strongly, but the national industry, particularly in having to deal with imports from elsewhere in the world, says Mr. O'Brien. Mushrooms with extra vitamin D, what will be next?
Super mushrooms.
Well, they are super mushrooms. Frankenfish, perhaps. An Australian aquaculture specialist says that fish farmers here are unlikely to embrace a new genetically modified salmon that is up for approval in the United States. The US FDA, Food and Drug Administration, will hold hearings next week ahead of a likely decision to approve the GM fish for people to eat. Critics are worried about the potential health and environmental problems the new frankenfish might cause. I'm just having visions of a Simpsons episode here. To make the new superfish, scientists transplanted a growth hormone gene from a Chinook salmon into an Atlantic salmon, creating a fish that grows in half the time. I would like to think that we can leave food alone, but that's just me. And Australians are seen by the rest of the world as being without peer when it comes to skilled baristas and coffee knowledge, according to the 2009 Barista World Champion Willem Davies. UK barista Davies, a guest of Australian coffee icon Mokopan during Fine Food Week, said London cafes openly trumpet that their cafe is Australian-owned or that their barista is Australian to entice customers. He says Australians are held in enormously high esteem around the world, their coffee knowledge is second to none, and they know what constitutes great coffee. Of course we do. While the London coffee scene is growing, it's often thought that the presence of Australian baristas or Australian trained baristas help achieve the higher standard of coffee compared to the rest of the world. It's nice to see us kicking butt. And in our weird food news, a pizza maker fired from his job at Domino's decided to turn up the heat on his former employer by torching two of the chain's New York restaurants. The antics of accused arsonist Jamal Thomas, who allegedly sparked the blazes by setting fire to pizza boxes, threatened the life of at least one person and cost Domino's more than $1 million in building damage and loss of business, according to the Fire Department of New York. The accused says, "Domino's is a terrible place to work," to authorities after his arrest. "They didn't treat me right. They're terrible to workers. I was a punch at work and nobody helped me." Mr. Thomas, who was booted for not following security protocol while training to become an assistant manager, also continued to wear his Domino's uniform after being fired and visited other store locations, claiming to be a member of a secret Domino's unit that measured employee satisfaction, the fire department told the New York Post. Interestingly, the suspect's mother, Jocelyn Thomas, added, "He's a homebody. He cleans up a lot around the house." Now, please be reminded, you can help Joy raising funds to offer the Taste of Radio course, Australia's only openly gay and lesbian radio community station. Joy 94.9 is proud to announce the exciting opportunity to pull on a jumper with pride. 2010 AFL Premiership contenders Collingwood and the Western Bulldogs football clubs have kindly donated club jumpers to the station this year. I wonder whether one of them came from Jason Ackermanis. Now it's over to the highest bidder to secure these much sought after items. CFC president, that's the Collingwood Football Club, a very happy Eddie Maguire donated the hot pie memorabilia after an interview with Joy's long-running program Allegro Non Troppo in May. The late Adam Stobbs conducted the probing interview with Maguire after controversial comments made during the Winter Olympics. Western Bulldogs CEO Campbell Rose responded to the current affairs program. Saturday Magazine requested to chat at the height of the then Bulldog Jason Ackermanis' comments about AFL footballers and sexuality. Both interviews were conducted during the week that recognised International Day Against Homophobia and reflect the important role Joy 94.9 plays in bridging the GLBT communities with the broader community in Australia. The money raised from the auction of these club jumpers will fund scholarship places for Joy's radio training course known as the Taste of Radio. Scholarships acknowledge and honour the work of broadcaster, trainer, board and Joy 94.9 life member Adam Stobbs, who unexpectedly passed away in June this year. His interview with Eddie Maguire was one of his last. His contribution to Joy and the GLBT community in Melbourne is widely recognised and he is greatly respected by his peers and students. Joy would like to continue the great work of Adam Stobbs and the Taste of Radio scholarship places in a fitting tribute as he was the primary trainer of this popular course. Now, to bid for the items, head to eBay.com/sports/AFL/memorabilia and choose Collingwood or the Bulldogs and the seller Joy 949 with no spaces. The items can be found on the auction only tab and bids will close on Saturday, September 25 as the AFL Premiership is decided, somewhere where I will actually be next Saturday. So we'll have a slightly altered program next Saturday because I'm going to be at the grand final. But yes, do go on and bid for those. Now, Dan Sims, you've put up with a great deal of news and things. Welcome back.
Thank you. Hey, it's great to be here.
Someone had sent me a text message saying, slow down. Do you think that could be my overconsumption of coffee this morning?
Perhaps. Well, it's Saturday. We all need coffee on Saturdays.
Yeah, well, I haven't been drinking. I've been...
Not drinking,
no.
As long as you're not doing all those, you know, those things where you have to abstain for a month or something like that.
I don't know what the word abstain means. To that person who has sent me that text, I do apologise. I will try to be a little slower in my delivery. There we go. So let's talk a little bit about, well, first of all, you're from the Wine Guide and Sommeliers Australia. Your career has been that as that person that encourages us to drink the correct wine.
The correct wine, the
not
right wine for the right
best,
occasion.
But the correct.
Yeah.
In a restaurant. How do people become sommeliers? I mean, it's the new celebrity chef, really, and we've had this discussion with a number of somms before.
Well, I think it's, the celebrity chef thing. I don't think we'll see the celebrity sommelier. But I think the whole idea about it is, when I first started out, there weren't that real many options to sort of come through and, you know, train and build and do all that sort of stuff. But now there's a lot more wine training programs. There's, we've got the WSET, the Quartermaster
Sommeliers. What's the WSET?
The Wine Spirit Education Trust. And also with Sommeliers Australia, there's a number of opportunities there. And also, the role and the importance of the sommelier has been, heightened over the last, few years because the importance, running, when you think about a restaurant, from the business side of things, generally anywhere between 40 to 50% of the revenue comes on the beverage side of things. So that part alone, that's a big responsibility. And Melbourne, also Sydney, or across the country through Sommeliers Australia, we're seeing so many great young guys and girls that are coming up through the ranks because they're doing a fantastic job and they're enthusiastic, they're motivated, they want to spread. And I think that's that enthusiasm, which I think is, you can't help it. Get excited by it.
And we've seen a great influence of young women working as sommeliers and women across the board. I keep referring back to somebody like Sally Humble at Cutler & Co., who is at 24 or 25 years of age, just an absolute gun.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's funny we talk about a lot of the girls, coming through, and I think we're kind of lucky. And I know that still there's the whole perception of being a bit of a boys' club, and perhaps I'm a little bit naive, but I don't even really think about it that, you know, separate the two now. Because
you're too young. It's almost a half a generation ago that boys' club existed.
I don't see it. I don't see all the guys, you know, and girls we have, and, you know, it's just that we're all, you know, learning together. You know, we're all going down, you know, this path together. And, you know, we are lucky. I mean, people like Sal's done great. You know, you've got Gab at European. Look, in Sydney, I mean, Sophie Otten, I mean, Kim Bickley, Clara Davidson from Bistrode. You know, there's more and more people coming up through the ranks now, but they just happen to be young and just happen to be female. You know, there's all these young guys and girls in, just, you know, motivated and professional.
So it's more by coincidence than by design.
I think so. I mean, definitely there's that, you know, we talk about that glass ceiling, you know, and trying to break that. But, I, you know, now, I mean, that's probably my naive view, and I'm sure some of the girls would appreciate that it's still that, you know, in that sort of other elements as you go further along. But, you know, it's something that we, you know, with Sommeliers Australia, we try and really promote. You know, we want to get the guys and girls, you know, have an equal standing, because that's what it's all about.
I guess the ideal is the Clark family, where David is the Somme at Viewdemond and his wife
is at La Vita Buona.
That's it. I knew that you were going to come in and help me with that answer. We should welcome also into the studio. He's been sitting there very quietly, being very well behaved. I'm assuming he was a good Catholic schoolboy. His name is Ryan Flaherty. Ryan, welcome.
Thank you.
We need to talk about this extraordinary CV of yours, and we will come back to that, but I just wanted to bring you into the conversation and let people know. You may even want to swing those headphones around just so they're a bit more comfortable for you, with the cord on the other side, and you're not going to hang yourself to give
That's
me a death
better.
On air. There we go. Your CV is just nonsense. It's that good. Are you sure you've worked in all of these places, or is half of this made up?
Half of it's made up.
Oh, that's good. Like most CVs are. Let's do a quick flick through Arzak in Spain, The Fat Duck in Bray, Heston Blumenthal's place, Il Bui, who we all know is the abode of Fernandria. Did you work at Mugaritz as well?
No, I didn't. I ate there, though.
That's all right. Mugaritz is the restaurant of Andoni Adruiz, who is another of these, some might call mad scientists, some might call extraordinarily gifted chefs. Where do you fit into that sphere?
I'm just trying to, from my point of view, it's kind of a new way of all sort of learning. It's a bit hard now with everybody, with all different chefs taking their own. How do I say, their own ways, their own directions. So everyone seems to need to feel like they need to follow something or create a new trend.
Right.
As I think it's just about building a platform, everybody coming together and sort of finding your feet and taking your time. There's no sort of right or wrong in food. There's just different.
Oh, there is a couple of wrongs. Brussels sprouts with canned pineapple is wrong.
There's definitely wrong if your chef says it wrong.
Can't believe you had to talk about pineapple the other week.
Oh, I know. I did a spot on another radio station, and there was a discussion about pineapple, and I'm fiercely allergic to pineapple. It's like an anaphylaxis reaction for me, and I had to sit and talk to this person about pineapple and pretend to be excited. Thankfully, it was sort of right-wing talk radio, so it didn't really matter. I don't know. There was a lot of people listening. Apart from you, Dan Sims, funnily enough, because you picked up on it.
Well, I sort of got to the pineapple part, and I sort of lost interest.
My mother was one of these very simple cooks. She was actually an appalling cook, and she's in a home with dementia, so she's not listening, and she won't kick my butt for it, but was an abysmal cook. Had to feed like a village full of children, because I'm from a very large family. And the extent of her creativity was, if I open a can of crushed pineapple and put it in this dish, it'll either stretch it out or make it taste better. And after boiling, then mashing Brussels sprouts, putting them into a pan with bacon and onion, and then adding said crushed pineapple, it's a wonder that my siblings and I didn't die of starvation.
It's called fusion, isn't it?
I don't know what you call it. Fusion wasn't quite the word I was thinking. You're here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, 0427 Joy 949. If you have a question for Dan Sims about not just the role of a sommelier, but wine in general, if there's a wine that you think you like or you haven't tried, or you're wandering your bottle store going, should I buy this one with the pretty pictures? Dan can answer those questions for you. His brain is full of that sort of information, along with some other stuff, including a tiny little spot for the Hawthorn Football Club. 1300 JOY 949 is the telephone number if you would like to ring and ask a question. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can in fact send a tweet to cravings_joy949. And speaking of text messages, we have one. Somebody is very concerned about me not drinking. Michael says, hi, Pete. Listening and enjoying the show, but still trying to come to terms with you not drinking. Is everything okay? Michael, we're close to okay. It's just that I'm taking a few little medicines for some, you know, as I head into my aging decrepitude, parts of my body have stopped working as well as they should. So I've got a buggered knee. And it means taking stuff like anti-inflams means I shouldn't drink. And so I've been very good. Other problem is I can't exercise. So that's
moderation
making me sit on the couch and look like a big fat lump. But that's enough about me. It is 27 minutes past one. Let's go back to the two fellows sitting in front of me, because you guys are combining to do something which is very honourable and a little altruistic, the Society of Eating and Drinking. It's all profits from these dinners are going to Mission Australia, and it's a combination of taking extraordinary wine and the phenomenal talents of this man sitting beside you. Sorry, I'm pointing at Dan and pointing at Ryan. Taking the talents of Ryan Flaherty, who has this ridiculous CV, putting those things together and doing something that gives back. Which one of you wants to jump in first?
Well, I think to give you a bit of background, obviously, you know, I hate the term pop-up restaurant. It's sort of, but it's kind of what we're doing really, isn't it, Ryan? Because we're sort of, we're there, Charcoal Lane, we do it every Monday fortnight, and we've got one coming up, and we do very, very select, you know, only small group, there's about 32 seats max. It's a great opportunity for Ryan, who's just come back from overseas from his, you know, his tour of duty with all these fantastic restaurants.
And I'm so ridiculously envious because your CV reads like a list of places that I have to go and eat.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah. And a friend of ours, Matt McCartney, who's the chef at Chateau Yering, his ex-chef at Chateau Yering, has pretty much just done all of this on a little tour he's done. We'll talk to him about that in a few weeks. But you work for The Point at Albert Park with Scotty Pickett?
Yeah, with Scotty Pickett.
Just a little closer to your mic, mate. They're very sensitive. How are you able to leave the confines of The Point to go and do something at Charcoal Lane? Is that not treachery?
It's not too bad. Scott's a great chef and allows me the flexibility to go off and do what I need to do every other couple of weeks, and I'm very grateful to have that opportunity.
And I guess it's also about building your profile back in Melbourne after having been away for how many years?
5 years. So it was a bit of a culture shock returning back and trying to find my feet and see where Melbourne's at.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's also a great opportunity, you know, for Ryan to actually take some of, you know, those influences and from all those places that he's worked and put a menu together and an opportunity to sort of share some of those ideas with people, which is great.
Now, I've been there'll be some sort of embargo on this, but I've been I'm going to be dragged through the mud for this, for stealing this menu that I believe I shouldn't have. But I'm looking at this combination of dishes, and without going into a great deal of detail, there is some amazing combinations of food in here. An eel and curry macaroon.
That's probably, of all the things, that's probably the most out there. I like to keep my flavours obvious and noticeable, not too confusing. So when people eat them, they can recognise them easily and understand them. Some people seem to put too many on a plate. And for me, and in this day and age, there's a lot of clutter in this in food, and eel and curry, I actually ate it years ago in a little beignet, and for me that's always stuck and I really enjoyed it, and from then I wanted to do my own adaptation of it, and lucky enough now these dinners we're doing gives me the platform to try different things that I've always sort of had an idea to try and play around with, and that was one of them I looked forward to, and it seems to work pretty well.
Combining eel and curry is a little odd. It's 1:30 here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. And we're coming back to not only do all manner of things, but Dan Sims has got some questions to answer here from text. Dan Sims, a man who, when he leaves his wife, is coming to live with me. We've made that promise before. He is from The Wine Guide and Sommeliers Australia. Joining him is uber-talented young chef Ryan Flaherty, whose CV I have been going on about. He's worked for Arzak, he's worked for The Fat Duck, he's worked for El Bulli. If you wanted to build a CV and make one up, this is pretty much what it looks like. But we have some questions. We have SMSs. Firstly, from Seamus. From Donna. There's a couple. Pete, your delivery is trademark. Thank you. Speaking of speed, the baristas at Truffolina Seed serve the best organic fair trade coffee in Melbourne. They're easy on the eye and a delight on the palate. I don't know whether the staff are easy on the eye or the coffee. Either way.
Probably a pretty fern on it or something like
that. It's on the mezzanine. You'll find it somewhere in Spring Street. That's from the lovely Donna Frock. Thank you, Donna. Another one, you're gorgeous, not a great lump. Yeah, good luck. Good luck. Could the wonderful Dan please explain why the wine and food people, the wine and food mafia perhaps, would like us all to move away from New World Sauvignon Blanc? And I think there's a distinction in this question.
Well, I mean, New World Sauvignon Blanc, we're probably talking about New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. And look, it's one of those varieties that, you know, not that we sort of, I suppose we are out here. Look, it's one of those things we sell, but we don't drink. And it's, I like to put it as that sort of like a movie critic bagging something like Avatar, if you know what I mean. It's so unbelievably commercially successful.
It left me cold.
But then you can turn around and go, well, it's too American and the plot was terrible and all that sort of stuff, blah, blah, blah. But it's like New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, it's the Savalanche, the tsunami of Sauvignon Blanc that's hitting our shores.
The Savalanche.
The Savalanche.
Oh, I like that. Used again on here. You like the term thank you to Ben Edwards. Reason I use this term is the slut juice. The other one that came from that was bitch diesel.
But I think, as a variety, my personal philosophy is, as long as people are drinking wine, then that's great. But there's so much more to the story in wine at the moment, and especially in Australia. We've got such diversity of style, so many different, these emerging varieties that are coming through, Vermentino, Nace, Albarino, Sauvignon. Can't believe it's not Albarino.
Yeah, it's I can't believe it's not butter.
The former grape variety, known as Albarino. But there's
We'll tell that story very briefly. There's been a lot of wine produced under the name Albarino.
But this SIRO thought it was Albarino, only to find out, but it wasn't. It was a grape variety called Sauvignon, which is from the Jura in France, which probably doesn't sound as cool as Albarino from
Spain. What's the difference?
It's a different style. I mean, this. Similar, I think, aromatically, but Albarino for me is like a mix. I call it this like mix of Viognier and Riesling. Sort of, you've got that lovely perfume, but also a real racy backbone of acidity, which keeps it nice racy and fresh. Mm. The varieties in Rollo Crittenden, and he's just got one young gun.
Hopefully, Rollo and or Gary next week, but Rollo has just been announced as a young gun of wine from Crittenden's estate down at the Mornington Peninsula.
Exactly, and they're making up these styles that are just all about a fantastic drink, and whether it's a grape variety on there, it doesn't really matter. But I think, in restaurants and wine bars, we're seeing a lot more diversity. We can't help but get enthusiastic about other grape varieties that are different, something unique, something that can challenge you.
We have an answer. Thanks. Too many people I know drink it, and I'd like them to try new things. That's from Hillary. And another quick one. Yeah, I agree too, Hill. Seamus was pleasantly surprised by the Amy Method Champenoise from Macedon Ranges, available from his local store in Windsor. Mr. Sims, Windsor, do you know this particular wine and have you tried it?
I do. It is on the tasting bench.
Ah, excellent, which means it's going to be got to very shortly. That's your workbench. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9. I am with Dan Sims and Ryan Flaherty. Joining us very shortly is another uber-talented young man. His name is Jake Nicholson. He'll be with us very shortly. Speaking of indulging, the man I know who indulges like no other, Dan Sims, he's here with me from Sommeliers Australia and The Wine Guide, and Ryan Flaherty, who's combining with Dan and Ben Edwards to create the Society of Eating and Drinking Dinners that are happening between now and...
basically the end of the year.
Of the year. Now, we should tell people where they can find information about that before we introduce our next guest.
Absolutely. Just go to thewineguide.com.au and you'll see a little tab there with the said dinners, said events, so you'll be able to check it out, and you'll be able to book basically to the end of the year.
And Ryan Flaherty, you're cooking for these, you've prepared the menus for these, and I understand you like this element of surprise, so I can't find pictures of any of the dinners that have been held already.
I seem to be stuck between two minds of that, whether to show pictures and let everybody see, but for me the excitement's in the anticipation of the unknown, and as long as you can hold on and grasp that, I seem to think the adventure's a bit more enjoyable.
You're just going to need to be a little closer to your mic when you speak. That's all right. It's a little bit scary if you're not used to having something that shape in front of your mouth. Now, an old mate of yours, I want you to tell me this story before we bring him up, is Jake Nicholson, who is now the exec chef at Circa the Prince. And you have a bit of a story about a competition from many years ago.
It was about eight or nine years ago, I think, Jake and I met through a competition Gourmet Traveller ran to go to El Bulli and work for, I think, a month. Jake and I met there, had a cook-off, and Jake was lucky enough to win the competition. And
you did claim off-air that he cheated. Is
you always think that when you lose.
Right. How would you like to answer that, Mr. Nicholson?
Oh, that was a... how are you going, Ryan?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, I know it was a lot of pressure and stuff, I guess, to be in a competition like that, and... yeah, I mean, I did slip a few extra ingredients in the bag on the way in. So.
As long as it wasn't a few extra $100 notes to judges, mate. Welcome back to Cravings.
Thanks very much, Pete.
The reason I wanted to talk to you today, apart from the fact that we think you're a fabulous bloke, is you've taken over from Matt Wilkinson at Circa the Prince as its exec chef. And I liken this to going from being a bridesmaid to being a bride. How's the change been for you?
Well, I guess I thought I was probably ready for the step up, but I'd been cooking for 14 years and had been here at Circa for almost 4 years, but I certainly lost a few hours sleep when I realised it was my name on the door.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a fantastic time and it's been fun sort of creating that team again, and just working with the menu and closely with the suppliers and the producers to put something on that's actually mine.
Look, Ryan and Dan will probably want to jump in here, but has it made a difference to the way that you, your kitchen is structured or your menu is structured?
We've always had a big focus on the producers and a close working relationship with those people. And also, I guess, with the wine as well has always been a major focus. But I guess, one of the things for me is trying to create that team. And the most important thing for me really is every other guy who and girl who works in my kitchen, and to make sure that they're, getting the absolute most out of what they put into the kitchen. So at this stage, I'm really focusing on those guys and making sure that, we're cooking at our absolute best. And, one day when they leave Circa and go into other kitchens, they've got those skills and they can say that, that they learnt a lot and they've taken a lot with them from Circa.
Sorry, I've just got to butt in. I've received the funniest text message, which I do have to, knowing that both of you are listening, don't mean to bring down the tone, fellas, but can Dan please cast his opinion on Oldie's cheap grog? I witnessed Dolly Diamond quaffing a few glasses of white at a party last week. That's from Donna Frock. I think there's going to be a battle of the bitches in this text message machine any minute. Dan, thoughts very quickly on Oldie's cheap booze?
If you like it, drink it.
There you go. You've got no more barbs to throw there, Donna, at Dolly, and I'm sure Dolly's going to come back and suggest you might have been seen drinking out of a box. Anyway, we shan't go that low in the discussion. Sorry, Jake, I just had to bring that in. We need to keep our listeners engaged here.
Fair enough.
Well, Jake, I've got to say, sorry, I was lucky enough to be at a wine dinner there recently and had an opportunity to taste your menu for that particular time. I mean, your approach of, we're talking about food and wine matching with the dinners that we do with Ryan. How is your approach when you're looking to match wine with food?
We take the food and the wine matching very seriously here, and I guess, the first step is, we receive the emails from the guys who are coming in and what wines exactly they're drinking, and then it's time for Liam and myself, the sommelier, to sit down and talk about, different flavours and, different ways of cooking that we're going to be able to, more or less complement the wine. And that's probably the most important thing for us, and I guess, like, as a chef, it's, you can... to constantly throw things on a plate, but when you're thinking about wine and you're trying to produce flavours and that are really going to complement that wine, and that's probably the most important thing. So Liam, works very closely with myself to talk about the characteristics of the wine and perhaps some notes and characters that we're going to be able to highlight with certain items and products.
And I think also what having a beautiful partner like Penny, who works at Maize, would probably be of some sort of assistance, I'm assuming.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we're always drinking nice wines at home, and wine's certainly a big part of my life. And I think that it's one thing for a
wine is my life. I love
you. Are a chef, Jake.
I was going to say there's a whole bunch of nodding going on in this studio, Jake. I wish you could be here to see it. We're like three of those little dolls you get that sit in the front of the car, because as you know, wine is very much a large part of my life as well. And Ryan's nodding over there also. This is a question that all three of you could probably come in and answer. It's like the age-old question, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? When you're working with wine and food, do you match your development of a menu to what is already already probably an existing and rather expensive wine cellar, or vice versa? Do you take the food and then try and incorporate more into the cellar to match what's being done by a particular chef? Happy for any of you to answer that question.
Well, I might just jump in there quickly. I think sometimes it's all about the wine and sometimes it's all about the chef. I think, you know, there's different occasions to, you know, focus on. For example, the dinners that we do with Ryan, it's about Ryan. It's about his food. My role and with him is to find wines to match his dishes. And, you know, Jake, I'm sure, you know, you have different, you know, maybe, you know, similar opinions, or, but I know sometimes with people, you know, you do super, you know, gastro dinners, gastrovins dinners at Circa. Sometimes it's a, you know, different scenario, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we're creating a menu, say, for New Year's Eve, for example, it's, you know, the food sort of comes first, and then that's where the sommelier comes in to talk about those flavours and characteristics to match the wine with. But dinners, like you mentioned, such as the gastrovins or the Monday table, who bring in, you know, these great bottles of wine, it's, you know, it's really something, and the wine is the major focus. You know, it's a big, we have to play a big role in that part to ensure that we're, you know, just sort of bringing out the best in the wine rather than overpowering it with the food, you know.
I guess the reason for my question was probably more economical. If you look at wine cellars, and I know they're rare, but like those at, say, the Royal Mail Hotel in Dunkeld, which is extraordinary in its value and its diversity. When you've got that sort of cellar sitting there, and you have to, and Ryan, I'm happy for your thoughts here. When you look at that cellar and you go, "Holy Moses, there is some extraordinary wine here. How do I build a menu that's going to best work with that wine?" It's more of an economical sense. Do you just go, "No, this is the style of food I do," and you go over and find those wines in there to match, or is it something that's very much a close working relationship between a chef and a somm?
I think it's definitely a close working relationship. Some people I think it's a lot of people don't take the time to sit down and actually try the wines with the food. It's a case of matching them and just knowing that they work well together, almost in an arrogant state, in a natural comfort that we know what works well. But it's that time you have to take to sit down and try the wine with the food in your own comfort, in your own space, and see how it actually matches rather than a sip and a spoonful.
I was just going to say, especially now, I think, you know, a lot of restaurants, there's such a great relationship between front and back of house. There's no that delineation as such, you know, them and us mentality. You can't have that. You know, of course, I'm sure there's still elements that there's a little bit of, you know, jostling from time to time, but it's the communication, that's the key, and that's the best to any particular time, and it'd be the respect on both sides, you know, with the sommelier respecting the food or the chef respecting, you know, the wine side of things. And when you have an opportunity to work with a chef who gets wine and, you know, gives you the time, you know, that's fantastic.
Back in my day in kitchens, there was a lot of them and us. There was the front of house team, and there was, you know, we superstars in the tiny little kitchen at the back
are ready to speak to
stab one another. Exactly. I do have to end this debate between Dolly Diamond and Donna Frock, and I think this is the closing remark. Hello there. I do enjoy a glass of wine from time to time, be it cheap or indeed a finer vintage. Nice to know people are keeping an eye on me when I'm out and about. My love to Donna Frock. I do enjoy amateur drag. That's from Dolly. And I think that's where we shall leave that discussion. You kids can take that offline from here. Jake... The pressure of inheriting, I guess, a two-hatted restaurant that you now are responsible for maintaining, is that pressure that you can do without? Is there too much pressure on achieving hats and stars? If it's, and Ryan, I'll bring you back in here as well. If it's Michelin stars or if it's hats in the Good Food Guide, what sort of pressure do you feel as chefs to maintain those standards, and what sort of expense is it to maintain those standards?
Do you want to answer that, Ryan? I can start with that. I mean, yeah, there is a massive amount of pressure, obviously, on, you know, a chef when you're in this this leading role. But I guess, you know, if you're a person who is, you know, out to do big things and, you know, you have a passion for what you do, you're always going to be under that sort of pressure no matter what you're doing. You know, whether it's just working in the larder section and you just want to make sure everything's exactly perfect, and, you know, and if you're in the head chef role, then it's the same thing. It's, you know, it's a high pressure to make sure that all your guys have, you know, are serving good quality food and that the front of house team are working well. And then it's a whole combination of things happening to make sure that the restaurant's working well. And You know, that does mean you lose a few extra hours sleep waking up in the middle of the night thinking about a customer who wasn't quite happy about a certain dish, or that the seasons are changing and it's time to change the menu, or, you know, the food costs and things like that. So
at least you have something sensible to wake up in the middle of the night to think about.
Yeah.
Yes. Just a quick question, Dan, for you, because we are very quickly running out of time. Rick in West Meadows wants to know about the merits of decanting red. Does it improve a cheaper drop?
I think a cheaper drop will always be a cheaper drop, but you know, if you, I think
cheap doesn't necessarily equate to poor quality.
Yeah, I think, you know, cheap and value, two entirely different things. Mm. I think just because something is cheap doesn't mean it's great value.
Something is nasty doesn't mean it's cheap.
Well, but I think, yeah, it's certainly not going to hurt it. Decanting is, I like decanting wine. It's a bit of theatre as well, you know.
Yeah, but I don't have the patience to wait an hour. Have you seen these little aerators that are about?
Oh, look. You know, decanting is one of those things, and yes, it does help some wines, but for me, this sounds a little bit wanky, but maybe, but it's like, you know, if you're reading a book, you know, you don't just read the last few pages or last few chapters, you know what I mean? And I think sometimes with decanting, when you decant it, you missed the first part of the story, and I quite like it, you know, whacking in a decanter, banging in a glass, and then enjoy watching it evolve. And gee, that sounds really wanky, doesn't it?
But, you know, no, but
I don't care.
Wine certainly needs to develop under in some way or another,
absolutely.
Whether it's cheap or whether it's not. Ryan, last word's going to go to you. I just want to talk about the pressure of maintaining maintaining hats. And I mean, you've worked in Michelin-starred restaurants all over Europe. How hard is that pressure on those guys that run them?
I think everybody cooks for different reasons. And that's right. What separates, you know, some people from others. People cook for pride, people cook for the customer. And as long as you maintain a standard, and a standard that you're happy with, and you're happy putting on the plate every day, that's something you can stick by, and hopefully that will get you customers, that will get you accolades. But as long as you do it for the right reasons, the rest will all follow.
So it's not about awards, it's about integrity.
It's about integrity, it's about consistency. People getting
terrific. All right. Well, it's time to go. So, Jake, thanks for your time. We'll catch you here in the studio soon. We'll have a bit of a love-in with the McCartney man.
Sounds fantastic.
Terrific.
Pleasure.
That's Jake Nicholson, the new exec chef at Circa at The Prince. He's very kind to join us in the middle of service. Ryan, thank you for joining us as well.
Pleasure. Thank you.
It's been nice to meet you, and I'm sure, Dan, people will want to go and try the food and again.
Absolutely. Well, if you're interested in what Ryan and what we're up to at Chuck O'Lane, the said dinner is just thewineguide.com.au.
And you'll see a little
all
tab
information
box for the
will
SCD
be
dinners.
There.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.